This is the Sophia Mare Studios podcast.
A woman may read a Game of Thrones.
A woman may start a podcast.
Two women may host Podcasters Landing, the show devoted to the entire A Song of Ice and Fire series.
Two women may cover three chapters each week, followed by history and friendship lessons.
A listener may sit and tune in.
A woman may use adult language.
A woman may reveal spoilers.
A listener may support the show on our Patreon page at patreon.com/Sophia Mayer Studios, all under case.
A woman welcomes a listener to Podcaster's Landing. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Nat.
And today we're covering A Game of Thrones, three chapters of Tyrion, Eddard, and Sansa. Tyrion's chapter, We get the Tysha story, which, again, the timing deviates substantially from the show.
Yeah, I think it's season two that we find out about her.
Yeah, and with Shay and all that, crap. Mm-hmm. And then Ned... The only scene of him sitting on the Iron Throne, is that symbolic of anything?
We'll see.
And then Sansa being a little bitch. Even for someone who is, I'm very sympathetic, and I think a lot of Sansa criticism is rooted in a lot of sexism and sort of double standards that we want women to, like, be meek and dependent, yet we have contempt for them for being that way. But even for, even for me, I'm just like,
yeah. Yeah, just kind of. It's the Joffrey situation. That's what bothers me most about her, is the fact that she defends Joffrey so much when she clearly, like, saw what's happening.
Yeah, but anyway. But it happens a lot in abusive situations because your mind has a sort of functional blindness, because it's like, if I accept the reality, then that's admitting I'm in a really shitty situation and I can't deal with that right now.
100%.
But first we get is Tyrion. And this is basically our little bromance adventure between Tyrion and Bronn, because they have been, you know, let go from the Eyrie, a few supplies, maybe some horses, but, like, that's all. Like, and basically, Lysa has every intention that they of them dying on the road.
Yeah. Well, she thinks she's smart, doesn't she? And she's like, yeah, you know, go on your merry way and see if you can, survive even a night, just the two of you, with all the clans roaming about. So I think she gave them, like, some hard cheese and some meat,
stale bread.
But that's about it.
And that's about
it.
So they
have to go and hunt, isn't it? They have to go.
Have to go find hunt food. And the road is so treacherous that even lighting a fire is quite a substantial risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it will attract everyone. All those what do they call them?
The mountain men.
Yeah, the mountain men. Yeah, even they are like, Bronn wants to go out at night and ride as fast as we can. And then Tyrion's just like, yeah, you go and, like, kill yourself in the middle of the night trying to get through this. I want to ride during the day. But, you know, Tyrion always has a plan.
Tyrion always has a plan, but also what they could have done is, yeah, ride in the night and then be able to have a fire during the day.
I mean, I do understand that, but I can see how Tyrion is just like, yeah, we can die in the middle of the night if we just go fast and not pay attention. Because as far as I know, like, the route to the Eyrie is sort of like in between two. It's like a valley, isn't it?
Yeah, it's so mountainous that, yeah, like, not as bad as needing the donkeys, like Catelyn, but still pretty darn bad, which, again, I can kind of imagine hiking, like, Bryce Canyon, Grand Canyon, and other things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Yeah, it's just because Tyrion is just banking, like, Tyrion's, I think, assessing the situation by, you know, we can't negotiate with, like, nature and they'll definitely kill us, but we may be able to negotiate with the mountain men.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he has the gift of the gab. I think the best, I completely agree, the best thing is for them to try and do that. And then if they die, at least you'll sort of be quick by these mountain men. Meanwhile, like, I guess if you broke something or if you were seriously injured, it would take you days to die in the middle of the road.
Yep. And so, you know, we get this interaction between, because basically they're sitting at their campfire, like trying to cook whatever meager thing that Bronn has hunted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bronn's just thinking like, you know, make no mistake, dwarf, I fought for you, but I do not love you. And it was your blade I needed, not your love. And just realize, you're bold as a sellsword, I give you that. How did you know I'd take your part? And again, Tyrion's just like, you're a sellsword. Like, Catelyn Stark doesn't speak your language. She's not going to give you what you mm-hmm. want, but you knew that I could.
Yeah, yeah. He says here that, you know, that Catelyn was going to probably, like, give her thanks and a few coins, but it would be just very, like, full of contempt. Mm-hmm. But with him, like, they know Lannisters, and Lannisters would pay their debts, mm-hmm. And even more if they escape that. So it's, I think Bronn gauged the situation very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a shot in the dark because, you know, Bronn could have easily just fucked him over.
Yeah, but again, like, Tyrion's in, again, this situation where he has gold behind him regardless of what anyone thinks of him personally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tyrion says here, when the moment came to toss the dice, I was counting on you being smart enough to know where your best interests lay.
Yeah, I admire that in Tyrion because I suck at that. Because so often I think even if someone doesn't want to do something for a morally good reason, you do it to preserve your own self-interest. Again, and helping Bronn, and Bronn's reasoning was mm-hmm. not altruistic, but still he did quote-unquote good thing. And I think everyone is like that, and sadly they're not. Because they're not smart enough to know their own self-interest, or at least long-term self-interest. I think that's the biggest thing. Yeah, people don't know how to balance between short-term and long-term self-interest.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I had a friend who, you know, we were friends for a very long time, but, like, in different situations, when she would meet someone new, she would just, like, brush me off
mm-hmm.
and, like, go and hang out with people that had things for her. So she was studying to be a dentist, and then she found a friend who... We went to the same school, all three of us, and I think that girl was in the same, like, form class as her. I don't know if you have form classes in America. So you have, like, your set classes in the mornings where you take register and then you go off. So that's a form class. And I think they were both in the same form class, but they weren't friends. And then she went to the same uni as her and didn't know, and they both lived, like, in the same flat.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and because that girl was far ahead, because my friend, she took a gap year and then she did another degree before going into dentistry.
Mm-hmm.
So that girl was, I think, three or four years ahead of her.
Right.
And she just, like, became really good buddies with this girl because, you know, she was ahead and she could help her. And then he was like, yeah, screw you.
Well,
to me, anyway.
Nothing wrong with having a mentor, but yeah, you don't want to, like...
Nothing wrong. Absolutely nothing wrong, but, you know, the point where you draw the line is the fact that when my aunt passed away, and I asked her if she wanted to come, if we could meet up, she just dismissed me and said, hey, no, I'm going to go see this other girl.
Mm-hmm.
And then I said something and that she didn't like and then she never spoke to me again.
Blech.
So there you go.
Short and long-term interests, always bear that in mind, people. Important lesson for life.
Mm-hmm.
Because whatever short-term interest you're fighting for so hard, it's not gonna matter on your deathbed.
No we won't.
So we've got Tyrion and Bronn, and what prompts Tyrion to go into this reminiscing on Tysha?
Mm.
Like, I'm
trying yeah to- it's fair it's very interesting.
It's interesting and quite random. And again, just the nature of, I don't know, is this Tyrion's, like, psychological intelligence coming in, where it's, like, Bran maybe saying all these things, but deep down, like, he is, like, he does seek genuine camaraderie and companionship, and so he's, like, strategically throwing this out to show vulnerability to ensure Bronn's loyalty at least a little bit.
That's what I think. That's what I think, too.
Yeah. I can't say with any detail, but I do know my first rereading was realizing that Bronn was played a little differently, obviously, in the show versus the book, substantially more lecherous and things like that. But but yeah, I know, at least in season 7, which is post-books, when, you know, Bronn has, they have that whole thing, he has opportunity to run with this bag of gold, but he decides to go back and save Jaime so he doesn't get burned by Drogon. So at least in the show, they decided to have that to be an element of this character. Whether that will show up in the books, we shall see.
Oh, that really annoyed me, but you are right. It shows that, like, he goes where the gold is, you know? So, like, Tyrion fucked off, and yeah, he's aligned with the enemy, but he doesn't have the blindness to gold anymore. So he lines up with Jaime, which makes sense.
Yeah. So anyway,
and then he also stayed away from the war. He was just like waiting to see where the pendulum swung, I guess.
I'm so mad he ended up the Lord Paramount of Highgarden. Fuck that shit.
I know. Oh my god. Well, that ending just I can't cope with it. I can't do it.
Anyway, we're in the comfort land of the books right now, especially the first book.
Yes.
So yeah, the whole Tysha thing is just so sad and depressing, and it's, you know, I think anyone listening probably knows by now, you know, Tyrion sees this as, you know, Jaime ran off to, like, this girl was being, you know, molested. Jaime went to run off the rapers. Tyrion takes her inside, and then they get drunk and make love, and then he marries her, and they play house together for 2 weeks before Tywin finds them, and the whole horrible, like, oh, she's a prostitute, and all the guards paid her a silver coin, and then Tywin made Tyrion pay her a gold coin because that's what a Lannister is worth, even in half man Lannister. And yeah. I like Bronn. It's like 3, 13, 30. I don't care. I would have killed the man who did that to me.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, Tyrion says, you may get that chance one day. Remember where I told you a Lannister always pays his debts. So I think he's like buttering up, you know, to prepare Bronn to kill his father at some point, because yeah, he is cruel. He's a horrible person to have done that.
And I remember reading this chapter, and you know, this bit where Tyrion has the dream of Tyrion is the prison ward, and it's his father in a sky cell, like, whipping him or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's really sad and depressing, you know. You know, I have a pretty good relationship with my mom now, but there was a good span of several years where I had all this pent up anger that I didn't feel I could express or would be validated. And so there were times where, like, it was a repeating dream where I would have of me, like, physically hitting and beating my mother because I had no other way to vent all that, like, rage.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that is very common. Yeah. I mean, I have dreams not like that, but it's the loss of control, I guess. That you have when you're in situations like that. I think he hates his dad so much that, you know, and then there's a bit like earlier in the book where he says, you know, I had dream that he had fantasies of having a dragon and having the dragon burn down his father and Cersei.
Yeah.
As well.
Which again, #, Viserion for Tyrion.
Yes. I hope they give a dragon to him in the books, but you know, so it's not news that he absolutely hates his father. But now from that excerpt that he's talking about, you know, his wife and what Tywin did, it you can see a little bit more why.
And it just made me think of, you know, just the complicated ethics of what I think to be like prostitution, because I do there's this guy in my social circle. I wouldn't call him a friend, like more my husband's friend, but he clearly had a really bad situation where like a prostitute stiffed him.
Okay.
And I think it really messed up his like, you know, sense of self. And so, yeah, like, you know, again, whether you want to treat a person's choice, how much emotional weight they want to give to sex and intimacy or not. But yeah, clearly with that guy, I felt like it was a similar thing where it was like, it was deep, like that incident with that prostitute was deeply traumatizing.
Hey God, just to correct you, because people might say something, what they call them now?
Sex
it's not
workers?
Prostitute. Sex workers. Yeah. Yeah. But just in case, because people might say something.
Yeah. No, again, no shade to sex workers at all. Just saying that men don't know what they want and they're expecting a sex worker to fulfill them, complete them, do whatever. And that's on them, not you.
Yes, absolutely. And then they get shamed for it. It's ridiculous. Like, sex workers get shamed for doing their job. And it's just like, who is the... you're the idiot here who's paying for them. More power to them.
It's, again, it amazes me the double standards that men are just blatantly allowed to be, like, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, like, but the women get saddled with all the shame and responsibility for that vice or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It's yeah, like, absolutely. Yeah, it's like with pregnancy as well. I find it so funny how it's acceptable for men to just walk away. I saw a TikTok of a woman reading a Reddit, and this guy who's looking for legal counsel because he was with this girl. They weren't even like boyfriend and girlfriend. They weren't in a relationship whatsoever. She got pregnant and she wanted an abortion, and he said, no, I don't want you to have an abortion. And then she said to him, okay, I'll have this kid, but then I want nothing to do with it once the kid gets born. So she has the baby because the guy wouldn't allow her to get an abortion. She has the baby and then gives the baby to him. And then, you know, she pays, I think it's like 25% more of what the court ordered her to pay in child support. So she's paying child support, which is more than can be said for a lot of men, including my dad. And it's just like, and then he's just like, he resents his kid now because it's like too much work to be a single dad. And he's like, I want her to take half of the custody of the baby. Like, is there something for it? Can I do something about it? Like, she's a deadbeat mom.
So adoption was off the table? Like, they couldn't adopt out if he couldn't stomach the notion of abortion?
Oh, yeah, no, yeah, he didn't want that. So now he resents a kid that he wanted.
He reads... Oh, my God. That just made my brain hurt.
Yeah, yeah. It's ridiculous, isn't it? It's absolutely ridiculous. But anyway,
Anyway, so Tyrion tells that story, and then... You know, of course, the fire brings down the mountain men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Bronn wakes him up after he's having that lovely dream about his dad.
Mm-hmm.
Bronn wakes him up. And then, you know, he, like, they hear noises and shadow and see that shadow creeping around. And then Tyrion, you know, says, oh, come share our fire. The night is cold. And you can have some of our goat. And then the mountain man is like, our mountain, our goat, you know. So he's, you know, he's just like, oh yeah, of course, your goat, what's your name?
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, how would you like to die, Tyrion, son of Tywin, in my own bed with a belly full of wine and a maiden's mouth around my cock at the age of 80? And the huge one
that is like an iconic line.
Yeah, laughed first and loudest, the other seemed less amused. And again, this notion of like, you know, you have nothing to bargain with, everything is ours now. And and then the gold, and I think it's not the gold that prompts them, but the promise of better weapons
and the fact that, you know, he says, I will give you the Vale of Arryn as well, because now Tyrion's pissed after everything that he went through. He's pissed.
Yeah, pissed at Lysa, and justifiably so. I like, I'm Tyrion, would I be more pissed at Catelyn or Lysa at this point, or both?
Both.
Yeah. Well, both, yeah. I'm just
both. 100%. It's just like one is as stupid as the other. At least Catelyn, rare Catelyn compliment. At least Catelyn knew that like he wouldn't serve any purpose dead, and like that she wanted proof. I get proof after they got they trial captured whatever. Him. But anyway, yeah. But anyway,
yeah.
You know, at least she recognized that he was playing them and stuff like that. Liza was just completely Liza wanted him dead. So
yeah,
but yeah.
Yep, and thus the chapter ends with Tyrion promising them the Vale of Arryn. And then we move on to Eddard.
Yes.
And this is basically the whole, you know, where people come forth to bring petitions. And this is the only scene, I think, where we see Ned, like, basically acting in his capacity as Hand of the King. Mm-hmm. And he's dealing with a situation that a bunch of quote-unquote brigands have laid waste to the Riverlands. And everyone is debating whether or not these were Lannister men, even though they weren't directly, you know, clothed and armored as such. But everyone comes to the conclusion that it most likely was, because amongst them was Ser Gregor, the Mountain That Rides.
Yeah, I have in my notes here as well that the Lannisters are so egotistical that they think that they can do anything to anyone, and they're not going to be called out for anything, because, you know, the Queen is a Lannister, and
so these, you know, men from the Riverlands tell them what happens. Basically, so many people have died, livestock and farms have been burnt, villages pillaged, all sorts of horrible things. Burnt us out, came riding in the dark from up the south, and, you know, and it's just interesting the fact that, you know, this whole thing, because this is a direct response to, like, the Catelyn and Tyrion, and then Ned and Jaime. And so, like, this is a direct response to a feud that has started between the Starks and Lannisters. And where is fucking Robert? Nowhere.
Nowhere. He is somewhere. He is hunting. He's hunting with Joffrey and a bunch of other people. I think Renly is there as well. But yeah, no, he doesn't give a fuck. He's just like, I'm going to go hunting, because apparently this fictitious animal, because he's so dumb, apparently, you know, he got told by a Lannister that this fictitious animal is roaming around, so he's going to go and hunt it.
Mm-hmm.
How funny. Stupid man.
Very, very stupid man.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, Robert's nowhere to be found, and Ned is left to deal with the very direct... I can't help but think the Lannisters would have found some way to stir up shit with Ned. Like, Ned just made it, and Catelyn made it really easy for them. I feel like this would happen either way, because they just always felt that they would need to depose Ned as Hand of the King, as someone they didn't have influence over and couldn't be bought off.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Mountain. And so it's Loras who wants to go after the Mountain, which I guess Loras is still butthurt about the nature of the Mountain being a sore loser and trying to slice his head off.
Yeah, I think so. I think he wants his
revenge.
I guess, but not really revenge, because I mean, Loras did trick him. I think it's more like,
I don't honestly, as
something to do with pride, maybe
pride. Again, the whole mare in heat thing, I personally, as a person around horses, I do not consider that cheating, because if you choose to be egotistical with a really rambunctious stallion, you deserve what you get. But, and it's funny that, you know, Ned thinks to himself or says to someone that, you know, Loras is more gallant than wise, and that's saying something if that's coming from Ned Stark.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, Ned knows shit. And, you know, he's dumb as fuck. So he knows dumb where he says it, I guess. Takes one to know one, I guess.
Although, after reading that book, Game of Thrones and Philosophy, there's a lot of stories. There's a lot of content about, you know, the nature of Ned, you know, being stupid and, you know, things like that. And now I view him as less stupid, because because they made a few philosophical points about, you know, Ned is considered like being dumb and losing the Game of Thrones, but he understands something that Cersei doesn't, that to lead a happy life, to find happiness, it's not just pleasure, you also have to have virtue. That's what a lot of philosophers says. So, So Ned understands that you could have all of the money and material stuff in the world, like the Lannisters do, and still Cersei is not happy because she has no virtue or no honor.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think that, I say that Ned is dumb, but in a way, he is a good person, but he just can't play it cool. He can't play the game.
Yeah, no, he just should not be in King's Landing at all. He should be back in the North where everyone follows those rules. And, Pycelle, ever the sycophantic, you know, supporter of the Lannisters, is keeps trying to say that, you know, we don't know that it was the Mountain. How could it be? Like, what point does, like, Lord Tywin have? Blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, it's decided that Beric Dondarrion is going to go after the Mountain, strip the Mountain of his titles, and bring him to justice, whether to kill him on sight or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's Beric and
His Red Priest, Thor.
Well, it doesn't say here, does it? Thoros of Myr. Yeah, but it doesn't say here. It doesn't say here yet. It's just saying, you know, get whoever you need to get and go off, you know, in the name of Robert of the House Baratheon, the first of his name, King of the Andals and the Rohirrim and the First Man, Lord of Seven Kings and Protector of the Realm. He's good at, he's being sentenced to die, basically.
Yeah, and then was it Pycelle or someone else is like, we need to wait for the king, and Ned has a sentiment that I feel a lot in my job, and it's like, that king ain't here. I'm the hand of the king. This is what we're doing right now.
Yeah, I mean, he is there, like, his literal job is to be the voice of the king when the king's not there, when the king's absent. So, you know, he has, like, he is the most powerful man after the king. So he gets to do that. He gets to sentence anyone that he wants, which I don't think that Robert's going to be too happy about it. But,
you know, Ned has the veil of, okay, you know, and maybe, like, he can hide behind not offending Tywin. Like, I'm sorry, this one night's not your fault, but this one night has gone rogue and whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, you know, Lord Varys comes and says, you know, you are bolder than you. After he's basically sends Beric Dondarrion off. And he's like, I'm not going to hear any more petitions for today. Bye, go away. Go away, you poor people. And then, Varys says, you are a bolder man than I am. And he says, how so, Lord Varys? He said, had it been me up there, I would have sent Loras. He so wanted to go, and a man who has the Lannisters for his enemies would do well to make the Tyrells his friends. Mm-hmm. Which I agree. I completely agree with that. He's 100% right.
True. I agree with it less so in that respect, but more about the next thing that Varys says about sliding Sir Ilan Payne.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I feel like that's a more pressing matter than the fact that, you know, not getting the Tyrells on your side immediately, because I'm like, Ilan Payne, wild card.
Yeah, but it's saying here, you know, the Paynes are bannermen to the House Lannister, so I don't think that he would do a very good job.
Yeah. Very prudent, no doubt, said Varys. Still, I chanced to see Sir Ilan in the back of the hall, staring at us with those pale eyes of his, and I must say, he did not look pleased, though to be sure it is hard to tell with our silent night. I hope he outgrows his disappointment as well. He does so love his work.
So ominous.
Terrifying motherfucker.
I know. Cool. Yeah. I think the man that played him is so... like, played him so well.
Yeah, no, he really nailed it. Mm-hmm. And then finally, we move to Sansa. Now, Sansa is basically, she was in the galley, like, with, like, the other women watching as as Ned was hearing all these petitions, and now she's talking with Jane, and Sansa's like, you know, it's his, you know, his leg, it's made him cross. Did Sir Loras hurt his leg? Not his leg, Sansa said, nibbling delicately at a chicken leg. Father's leg, silly. It hurts him ever so much. It makes him cross. Otherwise, I'm certain he would have sent Sir Loras.
Yep. Sansa, again, is romanticizing everything. She's like, oh yes, Loras is such a gallant prince. He looks like a prince. He, you know, he'll be like... It should have been him to go after the mountain because, you know, the mountain is like a monster and he would have slayed the monster. And it's just like, girl, get a grip.
Yep.
And not everything is a fairy tale.
Not everything is a fairy tale. Much to our sorrow.
Yeah. He even looked like a true hero, so slim and beautiful, with golden roses around his slender waist, and his rich brown hair tumbling down his eyes. Yeah, and father refused him!
And then Beric Dondarrion was handsome enough, but he was awfully old, almost 22.
Girl.
I'm just like, girl. Wow.
Yeah, I was like, this fucking bitch, I'm gonna like...
I'm gonna throw hands
with her.
But she was like all fawning over Beric, so the fact that she's throwing shade at Beric at this point, I was a little, you know, a little surprised. And then she said, again, she's inherited Catelyn's like classism and snobbery.
Oh my god, that's exactly what I said here. So bitchy and classist.
Yeah, about in terms of Jane having this crush on Beric and Sansa thinking, oh, that would never happen.
Yeah. She's like, no matter how much she mooned after him, Lord Beric would never look at someone so far beneath him, even if she had been half his age. Ugh. Well, but before that as well, Littlefinger overhears her talking to...
Septa Mordane.
Yeah, thank you. I always forget the woman's name. Yeah, he overhears, and then like he comes over. He's like, oh, I don't know, Septa. Some of her lord's father's decision could do with a bit of questioning. The young lady is as wise as she's lovely. Made a sweeping bow, and then he goes like and touches her cheek. His thumb slightly tracing the line of her cheekbone. Honestly, my stomach just turned.
Yeah.
And I have like in my notes, I have like in every bit that he's in and interacting with her, I have like, ew. It's like Sansa did not feel like telling all that to Jane. However, it made her uneasy just to think back on it. And I was like, even like Sansa, like those are his sketchy. And like he seems like Littlefinger gives everyone the creeps.
Yeah, Littlefinger, it's textbook, what is it called? Grooming. Attempting to groom a younger girl.
I mean, I guess back in those days, it wasn't really grooming, is it? Because, you know, children married old-ass men.
These old 40-year-old men. And still do in Afghanistan. Fuck the Taliban.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Disgusting. Well, not just Afghanistan, but Africa as well. Well, you know, throughout the continent. I don't know exactly which countries in Africa, but yeah. It's nasty, man. Nasty.
And so they get... The next morning, you know, they go to breakfast and Arya is there and Sansa is saying, you know, oh, like, Septa, this is bloodthirsty Sansa, because Sansa's like, Septa, will Lord Beric spike Sir Gorgor's head on his own gate or bring it back here for the king?
My nose is like, damn. She's quite psychotic. She is quite psychotic, I feel.
And it's like, and Septa Mordane is rightfully horrified. And, you know, he burned down a lot of Holdfast and murdered a lot of people, women and children. And was Arya
basically... Arya asked what Gregor did. Yeah.
And Arya screwed up her face in a skull. Jaime Lannister murdered Jory and Howard and Will. And the Hound murdered Micah. Somebody should behead them. It's not the same. And then your butcher's boy attacked the prince. Liar, Arya said. Go ahead and call me names all you want, said Sansa airily. You won't dare when I'm married to Joffrey. You'll have to bow to me and call me your grace. And Arya throws the orange or mandarin at her.
I love Arya.
Yeah, you have juice on your face, your grace.
And then, Sansa throws a little hissy fit, calls her horrible, and said that they should have killed her instead of Lady, which is so nice. Again, incredibly psychotic.
Yes, the functional blindness of it's one thing to, like, quote unquote, pretend that, like, to play along with the story. It's another thing to honestly, you know, does she genuinely believe? Has she convinced herself at this point that Micah was the one who started shit?
Yeah, I think so. When you tell yourself something over and over again, it starts to become the truth.
Right. So, yeah. And so they both get sent to their rooms for timeout or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And it sounds like, you know, she's like, that's not fair. And she's like nearly crying. But she's like, Sansa walked away with her head held, with her head up. She was to become a queen, and queens did not cry.
And so, you know, Sansa rips off her dress, throws it into the fire, is in her bed crying. And then she said, and then it's like, it was midday with Septa Mordain knocked at her door. Sansa, your lord father wishes to see you now. Sansa sat up. Lady, she whispered. For a moment, it was as if the direwolf was there in the room, looking at her with those golden eyes, sad and knowing. She had been dreaming, she realized. Lady was with her, and they were running together, and trying to remember was like trying to catch a rain with fingers. The dream faded, and Lady was dead again. This just made me feel so bad, because as I've told you off mic, and everyone listening, is very sad. My little cat, Sir Francis Bacon, sadly passed away. He had a malignant cancer, and, you know, we just didn't want him to suffer anymore. So we had to put him down, and, you know, just made me think of, oh, poor little Bacon, because it happened so fast that both my husband and I were, like, you know, in denial to a certain extent that, like, this didn't happen. Oh wait, yes it did.
Yeah And again, I'm really sorry. Bacon was the sweetest little boy. He was also a bookworm. He would always be like laying down on Amy's books when, you know, we're trying to record, and she's like, I can't look at my book right now because Bacon's laying on top of it. He was just honestly the sweetest.
Yeah, he was a precious
boy.
And honestly, I got it, partly why I'm so into audiobooks now is I literally could not hold a book physically because he would always need to be cradled in my arms like a baby.
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah, I'm sure that this bit really.
Yeah, so that made me think of it. But the good news is I did adopt two more cats because I know Bacon would have wanted me to help other kitties in need. So I've got two new cats, a black kitty named Cupcake and another tabby named Olive. And they're so precious.
They are very sweet. They're very baby. I love them.
Yeah. And so we've got, so eventually Sansa and Arya are brought in to Ned, and Sansa's immediately, like, Arya started it, and I was really surprised, I guess I forgot exactly how this happened, Arya is actually very contrite. I'm sorry, Father, I was wrong, and I beg my sweet sister's forgiveness.
So it's because, remember when, like, they were fighting a lot, and then Ned said to her, you know, you need to try and get on with your sister, because there's, like, there's a bunch of enemies, basically. That's what he implied. Mm-hmm. So that's what she's doing, you know? She's, like, she realizes her mistake in having fought with her, and she's apologizing.
Yeah, and, again, I really wish Ned would have had a, I don't know if it would have sunken in, but I really wish Ned would have had a similar talk with Sansa, because after the whole lady incident, I would, even if you cannot politically get out of it, I would at the very least try to instruct Sansa about, okay, you know, clearly this is what Joffrey is like. This is how you, like, maneuver around him, you know, and stuff like that. And he just totally leaves Sansa on her own to, like, deal with this situation, which is not very fair.
No, it's not fair at all. I think that he thinks, oh, because she's older and she's been, like, trained to be more, you know, to sort of play the game a bit more, and that's what she's been trained to do, that she can manipulate and maneuver through the situations a bit better. But yeah, he definitely should have said to her,
yeah, and be even careful. And Arya's like, you know, Sansa says, what about my dress? Maybe I could wash it, said Arya. Washing won't do any good. If the silk is ruined, then I'll make you a new one. And Sansa throws her head back in disdain. You couldn't sew a dress to fit to clean the pigsties. And I am so mean.
Yeah, she's nasty. She's nasty as hell.
She's nasty and spiteful because, you know, I think of course, within a lot of cases, it's projection. Arya is the one who is the one reminding her that this isn't a fairy tale, that Joffrey is scum, And so, mm-hmm. you know, Sansa lashes out at Arya for constantly trying to break this, you know, protective, delusional bubble she's wrapped herself in.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And so Eddard's like, Father Side, I did not call you here to talk of dresses. I'm sending you both back to Winterfell. And they're both like, no, mm-hmm. you can't. Please, Father, please don't. And, you know, at least finally we found something you agree on.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't think that is very wise for him to send them to Winterfell. There's nowhere that's safe for them right now, given what's going on. Given that he knows that, like, that Jaime and Tywin are putting their armies together to go and avenge.
Yeah,
I guess
again, Tyrion. Yeah, Ned is thinking that they can avoid all that by at least getting the ship to White Harbor to circumvent all that shit. But yeah, mm-hmm. it's...
Yeah, but they'll still approach Winterfell at some point. It's not safe for them.
Yeah, I'm not sending you away for fighting, though God knows I'm sick of you two squabbling. I want you back in Winterfell for your own safety. Three of my men were cut down. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Arya's like, you know, can we take Syria back? Who cares about your stupid dancing monster? Father, I can't go. I have to marry Prince Joffrey. I love him. You know, sweet one, her father said gently, listen to me. When you're old enough, I will make you a match with a high lord who's worthy of you. Someone brave and gentle and strong. This match with Joffrey was a terrible mistake. That boy's no Prince Aemon. You must believe me.
Oh, and she's like, he is. He's brave and gentle. No, I don't want someone brave and gentle. I want him. She's like, insane. She doesn't want someone brave and gentle.
Not if Joffrey's his father. He's a liar and a craven in any way. He's a stag, not a lion. And Sansa's like, he is not. He's not the least bit like that old drunken king.
Sansa is, wow, she is
throwing the shade.
Too much. Yeah, yeah.
And then, you know, that is, of course, the, you know, light bulb in Ned's head that, oh, but we don't see that immediately. You know, Sansa cried as Septa Mordain marched out, and Arya, again, despite her, Sansa being so shitty, Arya is even trying to say, like, it won't be so bad, Sansa. We're gonna sail on a galley. It will be an adventure, and then we'll be with Bran and Robb again, and mm-hmm. old Nan and Hodor and the rest. She touched her on the arm. Hodor, Sansa yelled, you ought to marry Hodor. You're just like him, stupid and hairy and ugly. She wrenched away from her sister's hand, stormed into her bedchamber, and barred the door behind her.
Fucking hell. She's a piece of work in this chapter, honestly.
Yeah, it's really, really sad that she hasn't. I am guilty of this to a certain extent, just because I feel like the kids who I went to high school with were very, very mature and then mm-hmm. kind of had a sense of a moral code. Again, like it was a quasi Winterfell where everyone more or less, you know, abided by the rules of social mm-hmm. etiquette and yep. courtesy and quote unquote honor. And then when I got to college from the West Coast to the East Coast to upstate New York, and there were basically just a bunch of college students, but basically mentally still a bunch of high schoolers and had no problem lying mm-hmm. and being disrespectful and discourteous and all those things. But for so long, for a good year in my freshman year, I was like, oh no, that can't be right. Like, they wouldn't dare to think to be so mm-hmm. like mean or disrespectful. Like, I must be reading something wrong. Like, just being like Sansa, where it's like, you mm-hmm. don't, it's like so beyond your understanding that you just don't think them being bad or stupid or mean is an option.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. She doesn't see the bad in people.
Yeah, so I definitely do.
Apart from her sister, she sees the bad in her sister, of course, but not anyone else.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I understand how, you know, a young girl gets to that point because, again, you want to give your child or your daughter a stable upbringing. And again, I was very happy in Oregon in that high school where everyone was really mature and kept the drama to a minimum, but it just mm-hmm. totally failed to prepare me for if people really wanted to be little shits at college and I didn't know how to cope with it.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it, that sometimes you go to university, college, and people are more immature than when they were in school. It's just crazy because I had I've had the same sort of experience as you. Like, my friends were we were all just very mature and we wouldn't bitch about each other. And if there was like something that was bugging us, we would talk to each other. When I went to uni, it was just like completely the opposite. Everyone was really bitchy, really mean. And yeah, I was, I guess, very gullible because I thought everyone was going to be very nice.
Yeah, probably the biggest thing is lack of parental supervision, whether it was their own sense of maturity or just knowing that there was punishment if at home if they didn't get their act together. But in college, there's no supervision. And yeah, there were just, especially just where I was, upstate New York, I felt like it's like it was like the one big university within a 100-mile radius. So I just felt like all these kids and also the lack of the quote unquote anonymity. That if you stir shit up in your hometown, people know that and that's going to follow you. But you're only, quote unquote, going to be at your university for 4 years. So you can be a dick and, you know, not necessarily have it follow you.
Yeah. Yeah. That was before, you know, the cancellation bits and that people can actually find you, you know, through TikTok or something.
Oh, doxing and all that stuff.
Yeah. Now people can find you. So
yeah,
don't be a dick.
Yeah, just don't be a dick. Yeah, just for yourself, don't be a dick if not for others.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. And those are our three chapters.
Yep. Short and sweet.
Short and sweet. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's just like, he is nothing like that stupid drunken king. And I'm like,
yeah, he's worse.
And then we can move on to history lessons. So my history lesson comes from, you know, the theme of the story of Tysha and Tyrion, the notion of a noble woman or a noble person or, you know, person of the royal family marrying a quote-unquote commoner.
Mm-hmm.
So that...
Well, less than a modern example of Harry and Meghan.
Harry and Meghan is a very obvious Western example, but I've actually been following more the story of Princess Mako in Japan.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, yeah, again, showing that history is happening all the time. And so the story of Princess Mako is, you know, she wanted to marry her college sweetheart. What was his name? Komuro. Yeah, Kei Komuro. Mm-hmm. And the law is in Japan is that if a female member of the royal family marries a commoner, she has to relinquish her royal title. It's really sexist because men don't have to relinquish their royal title if they marry a non-royal person. Mm-hmm. But so, you know, Princess Mako was willing to do that, but then the engagement got prolonged and the marriage got stalled. Like, it was their original intent, I believe, to marry in 2017 or 18, but that got stalled because a lot of tabloids started, you know, picking on Komuro and basically this quote-unquote scandal of Kumuro's mother, like, owed her ex-fiance money for like Kumuro's education and didn't pay it back, and like, you know, it was a familial like money dispute that ultimately had nothing to do with the royal family. And you know, a lot of people quote that as being the reason, but it was just a lot of, you know, conservative shit of, you know, certain old school Japanese did not want a princess to marry, you know, a commoner. And it got to a point where they're now, where Princess Mako and Komuro are now finally married, but just all the tabloid bullshit, like, basically Princess Mako has PTSD now.
Yeah, I mean, it, like you said, history very, very much repeats itself. It's so funny how, you know, the people and the tabloids think that they know what is right for members of a family that you don't even know who they are and don't know anything about their lives to just to punish someone for their choices and punish the people that they married. It's like I'm not saying either way, because you know Prince Harry and Meghan, they're really getting on my nerves right now just because they're just annoying, but But it's the fact that they, you know, they blame Meghan for everything, basically, like, mm-hmm. you know, Harry leaving and not wanting anything to do with his family. And it, you know, and always comes out with like a bunch of stories that she bullied people from the royal the royal household. I don't know anything about that. I don't know either way. All I know is that, you know, people feel like they have some sort of authority over these people.
Yeah.
And it's just and not fair. And it's not fair to punish the people that they married as well.
And it's, again, it's just, it's very difficult, like the notion of, I don't think it's absolutely hopeless for a, like, royalty or, like, a monarchy to exist in this modern world, but it does need to be progressive and be, you know, less mm-hmm. absolutist and more, like, again, constitutional monarchy, and putting fresh blood into the line will help your PR in keeping you mm-hmm. modern. So even if the old yeah. like grandmas and grandpas conservatives are like pissed off, like, you know, not to be really crass or crude, but they will die, and then, you know, it's will mm-hmm. be the younger generations who will propel whether you succeed or fail, you know. Yeah. And you yeah. need their support.
Yeah, I don't know how the situation was with when Grace Kelly married the Prince of Monaco.
I don't know
if there was like a big thing about that, but it was the same situation when Edward something abdicated the throne to
Mary Wallace Washington.
Yeah, yeah.
Nazi sympathizers, boo.
Yes, but the thing is Well, from what I heard, I am not excusing, of course, any of that behavior. But yeah. from what I heard is that everyone was so much against that union that they that, you know, Hitler was for that, and he kind of like became sort of buddy buddies with Hitler because he was the only one who sort of accepted that relationship, and no one
and
else
even would. and flat out told Edward and Wallace, oh, she would have made a wonderful queen.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly what he said.
Yeah.
So, you know,
again, monarchies in the 21st century, it's a complicated mm-hmm. thing because we've evolved so much from like divine right to rule and shit like that. I think they can serve a productive purpose, but I feel like very few of them are doing that or like revamping themselves or rebranding themselves.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. There was, you know, over here, there was that was a perfect opportunity, but that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, people always blame Meghan. It's just like, oh yeah, it's her fault that he left. And it's like, have you never seen his behavior before towards the media, towards the... He didn't like being prince.
If anything, she was actually a stabilizing influence because he was off the rails.
Yeah. I mean, he hasn't been off the rails for a very long time. But, you know, he hated it. He hated it. Mm-hmm, so, yeah. She was sort of like a catalyst for that yeah. to happen.
Well, it's how all in-laws, you know, basically, you know, once their family member is married and is starting to get some third-party objective clarity on the dysfunction of their birth origin family, and then it's like, oh, it's all their fault. And it's like, well, if you categorize being his fault as helping that person see how dysfunctional this is, then yeah, it's his fault.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. Oh, trust me.
Yeah. Anyway, what was your history lesson?
So, my history lesson, I got inspiration from the King's Justice, right?
Because, ooh. You know,
carrying the King's Justice. So, I wanted to find out the most bizarre punishments back in the day.
that were put forth, done in the name of the King. Do go on.
Yes. So... I found, this is from medium.com, it's like the nine most bizarre punishments, I think it's called. So in Southeast Asia, it's like one of the most terrifying methods of execution is convicts were executed by crushing, and they used elephants to do that. So the method was quite popular in India. From the Mughal period until the late 19th century, And the criminals were laid down, and wild, angry elephants ran over them repeatedly, ensuring a quick yet painful death. I don't know if it's quick, though.
Like, you know, trampling elephants over you, because you don't know exactly if they're going to hit what.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if it was quick.
Yeah.
But anyway, number two, death in a cage. And in medieval Italy, in England, because of course...
Oh no, I know this one. This is so gross.
If anyone was sentenced to death, then it meant that they had to go through both agonizing torture as well as public humiliation. And being isolated naked in a cage was the way to do it. So the criminal was put inside an iron cage in a public place without any clothes or food and starved to death.
Oh, just starved to death?
Just starved to death. Don't worry.
Okay,
no clothes picking at them.
Okay, I was thinking of, because this was an actual form of torture, I don't know exactly where, of putting someone in an iron cage and putting a fire under them, not enough to, like, burn them immediately, but to slowly cook them to death.
Oh, yeah, I heard of them as well. Oh, I should have saved this for, like, later on, second book. But anyway.
But yeah, go on.
Yeah, I'll go on, because, you know, it's lovely. Lovely to hear about that. So, number three is cutting the nose. And I think you might know this, because it is ancient Egyptians. They used to cut people's noses off if they broke the law of the state. Lovely. Nice. Once the punishment was served, the criminals were sent to prison. To prison city... sorry about this. Rhinocorura, near Gaza. Mm-hmm. It was a place full of crooks without noses. No one was above the law in ancient Egypt, and corrupt government officials too were given the same punishment.
Well done, Egypt.
Because we need this.
Yeah, that's interesting, because, you know, a lot of times forms of execution, like, you know, beheading versus hanging, was a socioeconomic thing. So, yeah, go on. Mm.
Yeah, and it's saying here, once a pharaoh's wife slit his throat in his sleep, she, along with all the conspirators, were sentenced to have their noses cut off.
Ugh.
So even the pharaoh's wife got her nose cut off.
Ugh.
Number four, animal masks and humiliating badges. So that's not that bad from everything that we heard recently. So people like to ridicule and humiliate criminals in the Middle Ages. The best non-violent punishment was forcing the criminals to wear horrifying animal masks and roam them around the city. Apart from these terrifying masks, criminals were given humiliating badges which they had to wear for their whole lives. The badges indicated that those criminals were not to be trusted with anything ever again.
The Scarlet Letter, basically.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, not as bad as we thought. So number five. There was execution by suffocation. And this was very commonplace in ancient times. But in the medieval period, a very strange kind of suffocation technique was used, called mud. You know? Historians tell us that the criminal was killed by throwing him or her in a pit full of stinky mud. The convict either died by drowning or by suffocation. In medieval France, suffocation by mud was reserved only for unfaithful wives. Not unfaithful husbands, no. Unfaithful husbands can go and have, you know, a bunch of children, different families, that's fine. But unfaithful wives, suffocated by mud.
That's like, you know, putting them in, burying them in the sand until their head, and then the stone throwing.
Now, this is what you were talking about. So, number six is death in a metal bowl. So... in ancient Greece, people were punished by cooking them inside a giant bowl made of bronze. The convicted person was put locked inside a metal bowl, and a fire was lit under it. This slowly burnt the person to death. The people passing by used to enjoy this act of brutality and thought of it as some kind of entertainment.
Again,
people were psychotic back in the day.
I don't understand, especially with how... maybe because death was so commonplace, they were desensitized from it, I guess, but... I don't know. Go on.
I guess it happens so many times that they're just like, oh, entertainment. Yeah. That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven is the dunking or cucking stool. So the cucking stools were used in the 16th and 17th England and New England to punish women accused of doing something unwomanly. Now, what do you think that is? At that time, he was gossiping, backbiting, having an argument with the husband, and fighting with the neighbors were considered unwomanly things.
Basically, being a Karen.
Just being normal.
Yeah, like all of those things are the negative stereotypes associated with women. So how can they say it's unwomanly? Yeah.
I don't know. Unless you're silent, anything else? Anything else is unwomanly. Open your mouth, you yawn, you sneeze, unwomanly. Mm-hmm. So the convicted woman was tied up to a stool and then dropped into a lake or stream again and again. The cucking stool is sometimes also referred to as the dunking stool in history books, which is good. Love that for us women.
Mm-hmm.
Now, number 8 is the brutal ordeal trials. And the ordeal trials were a test of innocence or guilt by inflicting severe pain on the accused. Mm-hmm. If the accused survived the pain, they were innocent. If they didn't, they were guilty. It's basically like what I spoke about trial by combat.
Yeah.
I think in the last episode. So there are basically 3 types of ordeals. One was cold water, where the accused was tied up and thrown in the water. In this case, floating was a sign of guilt. And sinking to the bottom, then you are innocent.
Oh my, that's the Salem witch trial shit. Like, again, it totally, like, they were innocent, but also dead. And it's like, if they were guilty, they were going to execute them. So it's like,
make it make sense. So the second one was hot water, where a boiling stone was put in the accused body. If the wounds healed within 3 days, it meant you're innocent. If they didn't, it meant you're guilty. And the last one was the hot iron, where the accused has to hold a hot iron without burning in order to prove their innocence. So if they didn't burn while holding a hot iron, they were guilty.
So it's basically, so you have to be Danny to be innocent.
Yeah. Oh, fucking, dude. It's ridiculous. And number 9, finally,
mm-hmm.
the Iron Maiden.
And
not the band. Yeah. Not the band, the Iron Maiden. So it was very popular in European medieval times. It was basically like an iron cabinet with multiple lethal metal spikes on the inside. Yay! Yeah. The criminals were forced inside the cabinet, and it was slowly closed until they died. Sometimes it wasn't fully closed if the purpose was just to torture the criminal.
Yeah.
Don't we all love to go back in time?
Yes, lovely. It's like people who romanticize, oh, I wish I was lived in the Victorian era. And it's like, no, you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, need to give that list to Jess. Like, Jess wrote a whole, like, paper on, like, forms of torture.
Me and her will have a good time talking about this.
Yes. Alrighty then. Thank you for that morbidly fascinating bit of history. It's important that we do not shy away from the unsavory elements of our history. Well, because mm-hmm. history will always repeat itself. I don't know. Maybe anyway. But what? I don't know. That got me thinking, what does it say that history is repeating itself with fascism now that all the people who remembered World War II are practically dead?
Oh, yeah. People like to say the World War II, like, you know, the Holocaust is made up. And it's like, are you fucking insane?
Yeah. It's illegal to say that in Germany.
I heard, is it?
I think it should be
illegal everywhere. I think it's illegal here to wear a Nazi uniform.
Mm-hmm. Or a swastika?
The whole uniform. Mm. I think that's what I heard. Yeah, because have you seen Dark Tourist? No. It's like this documentary on Netflix. It's this guy who goes to, like, you know, dodgy places and does, like, dodgy things.
Does stupid shit, yeah.
Around the world, but over here he did a reenactment, World War II reenactment, and basically I think you said that it is illegal to wear the Nazi uniform. Yeah, but forgive me if that's wrong. But anyway, so what was I going to say? I forgot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, let's not. Oh yeah, no, I heard... Right, that Jewish people can't get bone marrow transplants or something like that because there aren't enough people that matches them, that matches the same, because a lot of people were killed
in
the war.
Yeah.
Yeah, so many Jewish people got killed in the war that they still can't get people enough that match bone marrow. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
It's crazy, isn't it? I think it's bone marrow. Again, yeah. I'm sorry. If I'm
well, if it's 6 million people that were killed, then yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's disgusting. Yeah. Disgusting.
Alrighty then. On that happy note, let us move on to friendship lessons. So my friendship lesson is a don't do from Robert. Big shocker there.
Mm-hmm.
And so mine, in essence, is just don't dump shit on your friends and run off.
I like that.
Because, again, all the things that Ned is dealing with is directly in response to a situation that Robert's like, I don't want to hear about this anymore. I'm going hunting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He just doesn't care.
Yeah, it's not even a sense of I'm not in a position to change this, so for my own sanity, I need to step back, which is something I have to tell myself a lot in my job. But this is something that he could change, you know, or like it would be very inconvenient dealing with the Lannisters, but he could do something. And he just doesn't want to, because again, that would be too much effort, too much work that he just does not have the energy for it. So he leaves Ned to pick up all the pieces and basically, you know, again, Hand of the King wipes his ass. And it's like, it's like, don't do that to your friends.
Yeah.
Don't leave them with things that are especially that are your responsibility to deal with and go run off because you can't deal with life.
Yeah. And don't make them do what they don't want to do. Like, doesn't want to be Hand of the King. Just let him go back to his place.
Yeah, and don't hide, make your friends do your dirty work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's my lesson. What's yours?
So my lesson comes from, it's escaped my mind now. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, okay. So my friendship lesson comes from Bronn. Yes, I know, right? Because we spoke a lot about Bronn. You know, going where the money is. But, you know, deep down, he's still like, I think he's forming some sort of loyalty to Tyrion. Mm-hmm. So it comes from when there's a bit in the book where they're just like, you know, the mountain men were just like, yeah, I don't give a shit what you say. Just seize the little man. He'll be good entertainment. And then Bronn just jumps and says, who dies first?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so he's defending, and it's like, my friendship lesson is be loyal to your friends no matter the situation.
Be as loyal as a Hufflepuff.
Yes. Always try to be a Hufflepuff.
Yes, when it comes to
loyalty. I think Bronn is a Hufflepuff.
Oh, do you? He's a Slytherpuff.
Okay, yeah. He's a hybrid.
He's a Slytherpuff like Amanda.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, although people have on Etsy created like sweaters for like Slytherclaw and like Gryffindor and things like that.
I like that.
Anyway. Right. Yes, very good lesson. And thus concludes this episode of Podcaster's Landing. Next week our three chapters are Eddard, Daenerys, and Eddard. A lot of Ned in your face. Which, to compensate for the fact that he won't be with us much longer.
Yeah.
Right then. Catch you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Podcaster's Landing. The music to our intro is copyrighted by Persian-German composer Ramin Djawadi. This podcast is but one of the many shows produced by Sophia Mare Studios. You can get the latest news by following our social media, Sophia Mare Studios on Instagram, Sophia Mare Studios on TikTok, and SophiaMare_pods on Twitter. You can connect with other listeners through the Sophia Mare Studios Discord server. You can support the show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/SophiaMareStudios. Higher tiers get access to even cooler perks. That was the Sophia Mayer Studios podcast.